When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 95 of the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. This week, we got a good one for you. We got to talk with Jonathan Beachy from Best Effort Deer Recovery. He's a dog handler. He's got a few dogs there, and he does deer recovery. So we got to talk a lot of things about what he sees out there, what you guys should do if you're thinking you might need a dog, what to do when you're recovering your deer to keep the integrity of the trail in case you do have to do that, all kinds of stuff. That has to go with recovering your deer, not just with a dog, but everything that kind of encapsulates that part of it. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But before we get into it, don't forget about our partners. You guys should check out Grandpa Ray Outdoors at GrandpaRayOutdoors.com. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for whitetail deer on your property, starting with the soil. They offer a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods. They were started in 2015, but John's been in the seed and nutrition business since 1991 with over 14 different food plot blends to choose from. You're not going to have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They have fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it, they've got it. So if you've got food plots right now, you're not happy with how they turned out. If you did get rain, if you didn't get rain, that's probably the reason. But if you're not happy with the seed that you had, it's never too early to start looking for something else. And if that's the case, you should check out Grandpa Ray Outdoors. They're not just about selling their products, though. They'll answer any questions you have about what blends will be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. John and his team, a lot like us, don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition, so they're going to treat you and your situation individually. Again, if you guys are interested in anything they have to offer, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com, use the discount code RHOPODCAST, that's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. Also, if you guys are looking to get into your own property, or you have property you'd like to get listed, you need to talk to Rodney Hawkins. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, and he's now putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. Now, Midwest Farm and Land isn't your average real estate company. They sold over $85 million worth of ground in 2022 alone. They've got agents like Rodney all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, you can contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153, and he'll get you taken care of. He's also got his own company called RG Outdoors. He's got products from Radix Hunting. He's got Camo Dust, which is an all-natural scent elimination product. He's got Tacticam trail cameras, and he's adding new stuff all the time. So if you're interested in seeing what he has to offer or what might be coming available soon, go to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. You can message them through there. You can email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. Don't forget to follow us on social media. That's Ridge Hunter Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram. We do have a private Facebook group for the podcast listeners, RHO Podcast patrons. Make sure to check that out. Our website is RidgeHunterOutdoors.com. We have apparel on there. We have all-natural scents that will be available in hopefully another week and a half or so. We'll have some ready to go there. We've got the buck and doe tarsal sprays, and we have the calming spray as well. And we have our own food plot blend available there too. Anything that you see on the website that you want to purchase, use the discount code RHOPOD, that's all caps, no space, at checkout, and you'll get 10% off your entire order. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you follow, leave us a review. That really helps us out. It doesn't take any time at all. On YouTube, subscribe to the channel. That's Ridge Hunter Outdoors as well. Our show is coming up soon. I'm going to start putting stuff out about that, hopefully by the end of this week. So make sure you subscribe, hit the notification bell. That way you'll know when that comes out. We've also just posted some videos from Nate's property. Just posted a video with Jeff on putting some rubbing posts on one of his farms. He's got permission to hunt. So a lot of good stuff at the YouTube channel as well. Subscribe there. All that said, let's get into episode number 95 with Jonathan Beachy from Best Effort Deer Recovery. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll get going, kind of get your background on how you got into tracking and all that.
Yeah, sure. I'm Jonathan Beachy. In 2017, I started Best Effort Recovery. Mm-hmm. and started tracking for the public. Before that, I had been doing my own deer, friends, right. buddies, whatever, neighbors, for 4 years before I started doing it for the public. How I got started, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, how'd you get your first dog? How'd you end up with the dog?
Well, so.
Now, let's not go back to when you were a kid and had a puppy.
We're well, almost.
Yeah, right?
It kind of starts when I started hunting.
Yeah.
My dad never hunted.
Okay.
My grandpa, mom's side, did. And her brothers, so my uncles hunted. But they lived in Iowa. I lived in Illinois.
Okay.
Never got to see them much, but apparently I inherited something.
Right, right.
So when I was 8 years old, we moved to Flat Rock, Illinois, and there all my buddies hunted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the first year I hunted, I was 14, using a bow. I bought it at a garage sale. You know, just right.
Oh, yeah.
Rinkadink, self-taught. I think I missed 7 deer that year.
Is that all?
Yeah. the following year, for some reason, I couldn't hunt, didn't hunt. And then the year I was 16, I took it back up again, bought one tag, and went out and wounded a doe. I thought I killed her,
mm-hmm.
but we tracked that thing for probably a half mile, never found her. And so that was a raw deal.
Yeah.
So
is that the first deer you shot with your bow?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. A couple days later, I had a little 6-point forky buck come through. Shot it. The arrow penetrated maybe 6 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm pretty sure I probably hit the spine or the shoulder blade. Anyway, thing ran off. We tracked it for about a 3/4 mile. Didn't find it. But then my fortune changed, and I shot the biggest buck of my life a couple days later.
Really? Is it to this day biggest buck of your life?
To this day.
No kidding.
No kidding. Yeah, he was 177, a couple eights.
Wow.
Eights, I think.
That's nice anywhere.
Anyway, so yeah, my brothers hunted, two older brothers,
mm-hmm.
and we just, wounded a lot of deer. And at one point, I kept a record of all the deer my buddies shot.
Mm-hmm.
That was any time they shot at a deer, did they hit it, miss it, wound it.
Right.
And so forth. And with archery equipment, we were only harvesting about 50% of the deer we shot at.
No kidding.
And I don't know, that didn't sit well with me.
Right.
So what possessed you to start keeping track of that stuff? Just something you was interested in or what?
Just an effort to get better at our game, basically, yeah. Anyway, well, when I shot that big buck, I didn't have a great blood trail to start with. There was no blood at the hit site. I actually thought I missed him.
Mm-hmm.
Got down there to pick up my arrow, and I couldn't find my arrow. I'm like, oh no, I wounded that one too.
Right.
And, there was no blood. So I made a circle through the woods and came across his blood trail. And, so I went home totally depressed, thought I wounded a deer. And my brother said, no, that deer's dead. We're going out there and we're going to find him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got out there, went to the spot of blood I had found, backtracked, found the arrow, had about 12 inches of penetration.
Which is enough.
Yeah, it's not great.
Depending on where you hit him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I hit him well,
mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of his liver. And he didn't go maybe 200 yards from the tree stand, tried going up a real steep hill and expired and rolled back down to the bottom.
Yeah.
But at one point, we kind of lost the blood trail. And I was like, hey, we need to get a dog in here. And one of my buddies had one that kind of did okay.
Right.
He'd found one or two for him. And ended up, we found the deer before we got the dog in. But
yeah.
Anyway, a couple years later, you know, that using a dog to track deer was just kind of rolling around in my head. And,
mm-hmm.
and one day my brother said, hey, you need to get a bloodhound and train it to find deer. And so I started searching. I found a 3-year-old dog, bought him, brought him home, but he was a dud.
Mm-hmm.
He'd been raised in a kennel. I couldn't even get him to walk ahead of me anywhere. He just followed me everywhere.
Just a pet.
Yeah, he followed me everywhere, but I could hardly get him to go out front.
Right.
Following year, I bought a female. She was a lot better. She actually found a couple deer for me.
Mm-hmm.
Raised a litter of pups. And the following year, this would have been in probably 14, I think.
Okay. So we're talking almost 10 years ago.
Yeah. Now. So I got that first bloodhound in 2012.
Okay.
So 11 years ago.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was training my female, and this pup was running loose, and she hit the line and took off and beat us to the end. So I was like, okay, you got yourself a job.
Yeah, that's the one.
And,
right.
So that was Sally, and she was the first dog that I used to track for the public. I had her for 7 years, and then she got killed in a vehicle accident on the road. By that time I had Frank, which he was a year old, and had found a couple deer, but
mm-hmm.
he wasn't as good as Sally was.
Right, right.
So
are some dogs just better than others naturally, I guess, then? Or is it?
Yes, okay. Yes, they have. Some dogs have a better hunting drive than others.
Okay, because obviously that Sally came from the one you were training, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which,
and the male.
Okay.
That was a dud.
Right.
Yeah.
So it just, sometimes it's kind of luck of the draw, I guess?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. I mean, she was an okay tracking dog.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to the dogs I have now, she, yeah.
Right. Right.
The dogs I have now are way better.
Right.
Frank, if he gets on a line, he'll drag me through the woods pretty much.
Yeah.
The problem with that is he'll overshoot a turn, takes him a lot longer to come back and find it.
Right.
Yeah, he just gets overly excited.
So better because you're better at training them, or they're better bloodline, or a combination of everything?
Combination.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Back when I had those first dogs, I didn't know anybody doing it mm-hmm. commercially.
Right.
Or, yeah, for hire. But then in 2017, I learned of a couple people and read their Facebook pages and
mm-hmm.
got smarter.
Yeah, there you go.
Got better at it.
Right.
So when you started there kind of tracking for the public, what kind of recovery rate were you seeing?
The first year I tracked, I think, 22 deer, found one.
Really?
Yeah, it was awful.
Do you think that's...
But I found 9 for myself and my brothers.
Okay, so you think part of that is obviously the dog is part of it, but... Maybe, but a lot of it is also deer weren't dead.
Deer weren't dead.
Yeah.
Most of them deer weren't dead.
You're not going to catch a deer that's not dead.
Exactly.
Or extremely wounded, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how often do you, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but how often do you get guys that are just so dead set that they killed the deer, but, and they want to keep going, but in your mind, you know, like, this deer's not dead. And like, what tells you that as a tracker now? Like, multiple beds? Is it blood runs out and you've gone a certain distance? Like, and then how often does that happen? I assume probably quite a bit guys think they killed deer and you know at some point they're not dead.
Yeah. Obviously, if a hunter calls me, he thinks it's worth bringing a dog out. Some of them realize that the deer's probably not dead, but they want closure. Like, they want to know for sure.
Exhaust all options.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And that's why I'm called best effort recoveries, because in my mind, putting a dog on the track is kind of the best thing you can do to try to recover your deer.
Yep.
Well, now they have thermal drones and...
not in Illinois.
We don't need to go... Yeah, exactly. We don't need to go there.
I just did a podcast, well, the one that came out Friday, which will have been 3 days ago, but yesterday as we're recording this, and Nate, the fourth guy that helps us out, he... told me he saw on Facebook one of the guys that's doing the thermal drone recovery talked to one of the main IDNR guys around. He told him he couldn't do it.
Yeah,
with drones. So
yes, exactly. Because the game warden I talked to told me that it's like spotting deer from your vehicle.
Right.
Yeah. It's
or from any conveyance.
Yeah.
I talked to a guy who's got a thermal a couple days ago, and the same thing, that the game warden likened it to spotlighting is exactly the term he used. Yes. Mm-hmm. So in their mind, that's what it is.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, to skim past that, back to the guys.
Back to things that make sense.
Yeah. So, I usually keep tracking as long as I have property or permission to be on the property, blood, and my dog's working well.
Right.
Once the dog quits progressing the track, I run out of blood or out of property to track on. One of those three, usually I call the track.
Right.
So why does my dog quit tracking? Because if the deer is not mortally wounded, they quit, they'll run off in a panic, you know, they're dumping adrenaline and a stress scent.
Yeah.
And the dogs, you know, with time learn to recognize that. And that's what separates the wounded deer from any other deer crossing his path.
Okay. Right.
So I've seen it quite often that the deer run off, lay down bed, and my dog tracks to that bed, and from there it's a puzzle.
So they just calm down, and then it's just another deer at that point.
They calm down
to
and
the
it's
dogs.
Just another deer from there.
Okay.
Not always, but
right.
But yeah. Other times they go out for a half mile or whatever, and they finally just lose the track.
Yeah.
And
you're talking a half mile, especially around here, the amount of deer that have paths that you've already crossed and then have been walking around already, I mean, that's a lot of different scent trails and to stay on one. Especially if you don't have, like you said, don't have blood, you don't have that mortally wounded deer. I would,
and I can sometimes tell by, you know, the color of the blood, the way the deer's traveling. I get a gut feeling of whether the deer's going to make it or not.
Right.
Or whether he's still alive or not.
And you've been doing it long enough now, too. You've seen enough blood trails that you kind of know what to look for.
Yeah.
Like most guys see 2-3 blood trails a year.
Exactly.
If they help their buddies, maybe 5.
Exactly.
Right? So when you're seeing...
I had 95 last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're seeing as many in a year as a lot of guys will ever see.
Yeah, in a lifetime, right.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see not only with that, but also you were telling me before, like the way, even the way your dog's acting.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can kind of tell if they're close, if they're not, like what's going on too, right?
Yep. If Pixie, my best dog right now, if she's online and like, so last year I had one track where, the guy was using a handgun, 30 caliber, and shot the deer through the lungs broadside at 30 yards. So, you know, not much could have went wrong really. But he didn't have a very good blood trail. The deer took off down a logging road and then left, crossed a creek, went up a steep hill, hit the property line. So we had to stop at the property line. We didn't have permission to go on. Called the landowner. So while we were waiting, I tied up my dog.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just at the end of the rope, just hitting the end of the rope.
Yeah.
She'd stop and roll and try to wiggle out of her harness, just would not settle down.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the go-ahead, kept going. Blood dried up, nothing for 300-400 yards. Then all of a sudden there was a couple drops of blood, and another 100 yards there was the deer.
Really?
The thing went 3/4 mile.
Wow.
On probably one lung and guts.
Right.
And
they are wild animals, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you shoot me in the lungs, I'm DRT. I'm dead right there, man.
Yeah. So that one, the sign and the fact that he went up the hill normally would tell me that this deer's probably going to make it. Like, I was having the blues.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, there was a deer.
Yep.
But my dog kept tracking.
Mm-hmm.
So I let her go.
Yeah. That was one of those where the dog knew. I mean, you could tell by your dog.
The dog knew.
Yeah.
So
you said your best dog, how many are you running? Are you got several in training now, or what's that look like?
Well, I've got too much dog power right now.
Okay, all right.
I've got 3 certified dogs, and they're certified with the United Blood Trackers.
Mm-hmm.
Got the UBT Level 2 test, and that test is...
Yeah, go ahead and tell us what that looks like, to get it certified. And I mean, that's interesting, I'm sure.
So the different networks which state networks mm-hmm. put on events during the year, usually in the springtime. And I went to the Missouri one, tested my dogs there. There's a lot of judges there, apprentice judges. And anyway, the judge will lay the line for a level two test. It's 800 yards, I think. It's got three 90-degree turns, two wound beds. And they do that with deer hooves and I think 3 ounces, maybe 4 ounces of blood. Or you have the option of doing it with 8 ounces of blood. And it's aged a minimum of 12 hours before you run the track.
So it's a tough track.
Yeah, it's fairly easy.
Is it really? That's you'd consider that a pretty easy track?
In the real world, in the tracking world, yes.
Really?
See, that seems to us, I'm sure Canyon the same way, that would seem tough to us. But go ahead.
It's relatively
you
easy.
You want to hit anything else
no,
over there?
No, I think I'm good now.
He's used to being on that side.
It's relatively easy if you have a dog that knows what he's doing. What makes it hard is the audience. Like you've got a judge, the apprentice judge, and maybe a couple other people following you.
Right, they're with you the whole time.
Watching how you handle your dog.
Hard for you or hard for the dog? Or both?
It's hard for the handler.
Hard for the handler, okay.
It just gets in your head.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Added pressure, right?
Added pressure.
So you think the dog senses that?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Their noses are so powerful.
Right.
Yeah. I've often said I want a Bluetooth connection to their brain.
Right, just to see.
So I know what they're thinking, what they're smelling. Because, you know, everything we know about scent is just theory.
Yeah, right.
We can't really prove anything.
How do you really know what they smell, right?
How does it work?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people think that rain will wash the scent away, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't. I've recovered multiple deer after a rainstorm. You know, you can't track it by tracking the blood because blood's gone. It's not visible.
Right.
Put the dog down and they take you right to the deer.
So I've heard that it's easier to track deer in those, in like damp conditions, obviously less wind than like a dry, sunny, windy day. Is that?
Absolutely.
That's true?
Yes.
Okay.
So last year, if you remember, the first 2 weeks of October for sure
mm-hmm.
was hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And we struggled to track deer. And we probably left a couple ones out there, you know, dead deer out there. I don't know. I never got the feedback, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
It was just so hot and dry that the scent trails didn't stay long, and I tried to track mostly at night if it's that hot and dry, because when the dew sets, that kind of reactivates the scent.
Okay.
And the dogs find it a lot easier to track. It doesn't wear them out quite as quick.
Okay. So to back up here, you said you're running three dogs that are certified?
Yes.
Right now? So do you have other guys that handle for you too?
I do not.
So you're just running three dogs. That's so like if you take one dog out, let's say like the night before, and you got another one the next day, you can take the other dog. You can rotate them in and out.
Yeah,
I guess to keep them fresh.
I don't always, but I like to, especially on weekends.
Yeah,
I'll put two dogs in the car and kind of switch the tracks off.
Right.
You know, you go.
Yeah.
And I'll take out Pixie first, and then Frank or
yeah,
whatever. There was, I think, two tracks last year where I took one dog out and they weren't able to find the deer, switched the dogs, ran the track again, found the deer.
Okay.
Why that is, I'm not quite sure. Well, the one track, if I would have kept going with the first dog, we would have found it.
Yeah.
Probably for both of them. I'm not sure. Part of that is my fault because I have more confidence in Pixie than in Frank.
Right.
I get to doubt in Frank too soon.
Yeah. Well,
because he'll play the wind a little more than Pixie will. He'll run a looser track. Mm-hmm. You know, he might be 10 yards off the actual track that the deer ran.
Okay.
If that's where the sand is, you know. So I miss the sign and think he's doing something weird.
Right.
But Pixie runs a lot tighter line, travels a lot slower.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to see more.
So does in your certification process is level two, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So does it make a difference whether they're off the trail for 10 yards or is the end result or how does that look like in your, and is there a level one or a level three?
Yes.
Or, okay.
So there is a level one. Level one is 4 hours old, 400 yards, one or two 90s, I'm not sure, one wound bed. Level three is more about distractions and stuff.
Okay.
That one, I think they only have to age it for 4 hours. So it's a fairly fresh track, but then they put a lot of distractions in it. They cross creeks, do backtracks,
mm-hmm.
run you past people partying and
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, that's so right. Level two, what you're looking for is
a competent,
good for around here.
A competent dog.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Like they're going to be able to make a track with no distractions for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that, but you said that was 800 yards on level two?
Yes.
See, so like just a regular deer hunter tracking 800 yards with however many 90s beds, like without a dog, you're talking all night pretty easy.
Probably.
I mean,
yeah, because
once you, especially once you hit those 90s,
that's about a half mile.
Yeah. And guys are, because you hit that and you're like, okay, I was going this way, especially if it's on a trail. I run out of blood here. I'm going to keep going that way for a while. Then I'm going to come back. And then maybe I go the wrong way the first time. And if mm-hmm. you, especially on 4 ounces, how much blood did you say?
4 ounces if you're using hooves, yes.
Yeah. So that's, to a normal person, that would be, or to a person in general, that's. Yeah.
That's like a quarter of a beer. That's not much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
for Uncle Jeff, that's not much.
No.
Yeah. When I tested Pixie, she ran that line in 20 minutes.
No kidding.
No kidding.
So what's the farthest track that you went on last year?
Oh, my. The longest recovery?
Yes.
Was about a mile and three quarter, I think.
How long did that one take?
I had Frank on that, so we moved along pretty good.
Okay.
45 minutes to an hour, probably.
No kidding. That's
probably an hour. I can't remember for sure.
Like, I don't know what that is for a dog, but for tracking that distance, that's a lot faster than you're going to do it. I mean, you're going to give up at some point if you don't have a dog, right?
Yeah.
Which is probably what happened.
Well, yeah, they had tracked it for a good long ways, and finally the blood fizzled out.
What was the hit?
Liver, guts.
Archery?
Yes.
Okay.
Crossbow, I think.
Okay.
So were they thinking dead?
I'm not 100%
or are they just sure. looking for closure? Were they thinking, hey, this deer's dead, you got to help me? Or
oh, we were pretty sure it was dead.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I think they knew for a fact it was a gut shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just a matter of when it was going to die kind of thing?
Yeah.
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 Okay. Do you keep track of that at all? Like weapon... Broadhead, for example, on mm-hmm. archery, you keep track of all that stuff somewhere?
Yes, I keep a paper in the car that before I go out on the track, I fill it out.
Okay.
You know, what was the weather like when you shot? What's the weather like now?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of weapon was used?
Right.
What kind of broadhead? Where the hunter thinks he hit the deer.
Right,
then
exactly.
When I come back, it's like how far did... We track it. Did we find it? Where did the hunter hit it compared to where he thinks he hit it?
That was what I was going to follow up with is how often is it where they thought they hit it at?
Well, it's never where they think they hit it.
Okay.
I mean, how often have you shot a deer?
And, oh, man. And without a camera, I don't know how you can tell. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, unless they're 20 yards and you just know you're tendering them. But even then, like, I've killed deer that I thought.
You think you just smoked them, you come down, you look at them, that's 3 inches higher than
exactly.
I was
4 inches, 3 inches higher into the back than I thought it was. Mm-hmm. You still got double lungs, but it's like you're not where you thought you hit them at, you know? So, yeah, I figure that's probably the case.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a couple deer last year that I thought I had a, you know, perfect shot on them, but for some reason they dropped in their tracks because I spined them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's...
No tracking there, Pixie.
Exactly. And I was trying to shoot them for, you know, training tracks and stuff. So
right.
I was a little disappointed.
So another thing that's obviously a big topic, and we just talked about it on Friday with Corey from the Post Shop Bible. He was up at the show too.
Okay, yeah.
And, you know, is the broadhead thing. It's like fixed blades or expandables. And his rule of thumb was like, okay, 65 pounds or higher, you're probably okay using an expandable. And my kind of thing on it is, I feel like you're better forward with a fixed blade, you're better back with an expandable. But I think you have a better chance forward with an expandable than you do back with a fixed blade. But I don't know, what's kind of your experience with that? Like, do you recover more certain hits with a certain broadhead?
So,
type, not just...
Probably 50% of the calls I get are from high shoulder hits.
Mm-hmm.
With 6 inches of penetration, 8 inches of penetration, of course, using a mechanical broadhead.
Right.
I love getting a call when they used an expandable broadhead through the guts.
Right. Right.
So people are going to be using expandables. I say if you're going to be using expandables, give yourself plenty of room for error.
Mm-hmm.
Stay off the front leg.
Yeah.
Stay low. And off the front leg by 3 or 4 inches.
Right.
Because the deer's first response when you shoot is to drop.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's why you're always 3 inches. You hit 3 inches higher than you thought.
Yeah,
you
and there's no good way to know whether they're going to or not. Because, like, I've watched tons of guys film video guys shooting deer. I've shot my share of deer. Some of them you think for sure they're going to drop, and they don't move till the arrow gets there. And we're talking, you know, 20 to 30 yards where mm-hmm. you where they have time to move, right, and mm-hmm. react. Some of them just seem relaxed as all get out, and at 30 yards, they're, like, out of the picture before the arrow gets there almost kind of yeah. thing. So it's like you're saying, they're going to move sometimes. Sometimes they're not. It's hard to know when. I think you're right. I think you just have to yeah. expect it.
Yeah. These days, we have range finders.
Mm-hmm.
We know exactly how far it is to that deer. We can pretty much put that arrow where we want it, right?
Right.
So I say aim in the lower third of the body
mm-hmm.
and give yourself room off that leg, especially if you're shooting fixed
right.
or expandables.
Right.
With fixed blades, you can get up there a little closer because usually with a fixed blade, you're not shooting larger than about an inch and a quarter.
Right. And you would rather you would rather miss forward with those, you think?
Well, you can get away with more.
Right.
Because you'll be more likely to blow through the deer.
You have.
Because you're not using as much energy
yeah,
to push
right.
that.
It takes kinetic
through.
Energy to open the fix, the expandable. Exactly. No matter which one it is, it
exactly.
takes X amount of kinetic energy, so you're losing the penetration for the opening of the head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was Corey's reasoning for, like, if you're shooting 65 pounds or higher, you're probably yeah. okay on a whitetail shooting the expandables. If you're yeah. not, probably want to look at a fixed blade, because he said it takes about 8 pounds or something of kinetic energy.
You know, when I was in the shop, blades. I used to have all that stuff, and I can't remember what it is, but I do know that it takes energy to open a head, mm-hmm. and you're losing what you're losing, you
yeah.
know. And
but some of those two-blade heads, if they open horizontally, they're catching two ribs going in
yeah.
there. They have no other option.
Yeah, and right. they're typically thinner, and, mm-hmm. and a lot of them have the wider
yeah.
cutting path you're talking about.
I had
about,
one
so.
Deer last year that, the shot placement was perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He only got 8 inches penetration. It killed the deer, but he didn't have blood trail worth talking about.
Right.
If he'd had a smaller head that would have punched right through that deer, he'd have had a hole on both sides.
Right.
He'd have had a better blood trail. His deer would have died in half the distance.
Mm-hmm.
He'd have never had to call me.
Right.
Or the other guy that tried to track it before I got there.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, so there's another thing there. Does that happen often? And then how tough is that? Does it make it any tougher on your dogs when there's already been one in there?
Oh, yeah.
Does it?
It does.
That's one of those distractions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, so every time I follow up with the second dog goes where the first dog went. First, then he says, "Oh no, you were wrong," and comes back and figures it out. So
really,
same thing happens.
At least check and make sure they didn't know what they were doing, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Same thing happens when you bring your pet or porch dog out,
mm-hmm.
try to track it. So not only is the dog in there messing things up, you're walking on the track and tracking scent all over.
Yeah,
but hopefully my dogs are good enough to know what they're doing that they can sort it out.
Right. Okay, so that
I have confidence in Pixie that she was able to do that.
Right, sort it out and eventually get on it.
It makes it hard, but
yeah,
it might take another 30 minutes.
Right. That kind of leads into another thing I was wanting to talk about is when a guy does shoot a deer, what would be your preference of when they decide that they need a dog, and how would they go about doing that? Is it, okay, you shoot them, maybe you think you made a good shot like we were talking about, but you ultimately you didn't, but you thought you did. So you're getting on the blood trail. Let's say you wait an hour, and they get on a blood trail. I'd assume you would rather them go slow till you run out of blood, maybe, and then decide, or see the type of blood. What should a guy do when he shoots a deer to get to the process of calling a dog, or to at least make sure he maintains the trail best he can for the dog to come in without those distractions?
Right. Okay, so if you make a perfect shot,
mm-hmm.
you should be able to go recover that deer within an hour.
Right.
If it's a little further back, liver, gut, you need, if it's liver, you need to give him at least 6 hours. 12 hours is better.
Mm-hmm.
And the gut shot, minimum of 12 hours. Usually they're dead by 24, but not necessarily. And that's true for liver hits as well. I have had liver hits that were still alive at 22 hours.
Wow.
Really?
But, so, if you know you hit him back, and you're probably just as good off as, you're probably best off to just call a tracker right away, tell him your situation, have him on standby. Because mm-hmm. I would rather get a call at 9 o'clock in the evening. Well, by that time, usually they've tracked.
Yeah.
But right at sundown, you know.
So, yeah, 7.
Yeah, I would rather get a call in the evening, schedule a track in the morning, than have a guy go out, look for his deer in the morning, then call me up.
Yeah.
Because now I'm at work when I get the call. I can't make it there till 24 hours after he was shot, which is okay. I mean, we can still track at that point. It might not be necessary to wait that long. But, yeah, it usually doesn't take long before I'm booked for the evening.
Right.
So if you call me from the tree stand, I can fill you in. If you end up finding your deer not needing me, there's room for the next guy.
Yeah.
But it's just a good way to.
So the earlier the better on deciding maybe you're going to need one.
Yes.
Like get you scheduled.
Yes. Yes.
So do you take your cell phone to the tree stand with you?
Always.
I understand. I got a deer shop. I understand. I'm answering the phone or getting texted. Yeah.
Yep. But as far as when you go to track your deer, then
mm-hmm.
just be careful. Don't take more than about two people with you, or one person with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like
two total.
Yes. And then don't go stomping all over the woods. When you're tracking blood, stay off to the side of it. Try not to disturb the actual scent line. Because if you do step into the blood, you know, that blood sticks to your shoe.
Mm-hmm.
You come to where the deer did a 90 or veered off the deer trail he was going down. You keep walking down the deer trail, right? So to the dog, he's coming down here. The obvious choice is to keep going, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it still smells like the deer.
Yep.
But the deer actually went off to the left. So the dog has to go down there and figure out, oh, no, that's just the hunter.
Right.
Turn around, come back, find it. Versus if you're walking beside the trail, they're more likely to catch that turn the first try.
That makes sense. And then it's, I guess at that point, it's two different trails, really, even. The dog knows that, like, they can tell the hunter's over here, the deer's over here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Can you tell the difference when that happens?
So
as a handler, can you tell? Well, your dog's going, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I can usually see when they lose the trail, start searching. Then I just stop and wait and let them figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You let them figure it out, and then they come and say, come on, boss, let's go.
As a handler, you have to pay a lot of attention to the dog's body language.
That's kind of knowing your dog, isn't mm-hmm. it? Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How often do you get deer that make, because the first one I shot last year, we tracked, and way past 90, not quite 180, but he almost backtracked for, because we followed the trail to a point, like I was talking about, and it made sense that he would keep going this way, so we kept looking and didn't find anything, so we came back, and we went down the next place that would make sense, which was a 90 to the south. So we went that direction, didn't find anything, came back. Eventually, we were like, we had just given up. Like, I was going to try to find somebody, call somebody. We were on the way back to the truck, so we were going down the trail, and it was easier to go, say, this direction than back on where we came from. Mm-hmm. So I started going that direction and came up on blood again, just happenstance to find it that he had turned around and walked back in almost exactly the same place for probably 30, 40 yards. Like, mm-hmm. Is that fairly common? You see it some?
I see it some, yes. I had for sure one track last year where the deer backtracked for about 150 yards.
No kidding.
And
how does the dog react to that?
Oh, man.
Is it like
back and forth and back and forth and just checking everything out?
Yeah.
Yeah, she backtracked the trail we'd come in on, and it took her a good 30 minutes probably to get that figured out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, it took us longer than 30 minutes, yeah, so that's not bad.
I just had to wait on her and let her work. And
yeah.
So she just kind of stopped and then thought, oh, what the heck, and then backed up and run that track.
So he had come, okay. come up to a bed, and then when he left, it was probably 10 yards to the side. And it was dark, so it was a little harder for me to realize what was going on. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't bleeding a whole lot by that point. But I realized that he had backtracked, and I basically just let her work it out and just waited. As long as she was working, searching.
Right.
I let her do it.
Yeah.
Because if I get impatient, it screws everything up.
Yeah. So. At what point do you have to step in and either maybe change direction of the dog, or can you even do that? Like,
well, so yeah, I start looking for blood, obvious signs that the deer, you know, direction of travel and stuff.
Right.
And if I come across something, I can call her over and point it out to her. She'll mm-hmm. put her nose down in there and go.
Get her back, kind of back on the right track or whatever.
Two years ago, I think I had that happen. The buck was a liver shot, I think. Let's see. Yeah, we'd tracked up to kind of a point at the edge of a field.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bed, and Pixie went right through the bed and was checking left and right and forward and everywhere. Couldn't pick up anything. And the hunters had come up behind me and noticed a blood trail leaving kind of at a 45 toward the back. And when we noticed that, we were able to bring Pixie over, and she took off.
Right. You got her back going. Yeah, in the right
put her nose down in there and took off.
For sure. So speaking of that, you said the hunters come up behind you. Is that something that you say, hey, you guys, you need to hang back a certain amount of feet or a certain amount of yards, or I'll let you know when you can come up, or what does that look like?
So different trackers do it differently. I prefer, because I'm running by myself, I prefer if the hunter's close. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 10 yards behind me. I just tell them to, you know, stay about 10 yards behind me. Okay. Be careful to not walk around too much.
Which I guess that's probably, like you said, just more handler preference.
Yeah, it's handler preference.
Yeah, and I guess if you had a dog that got distracted more easily, that would probably play into it as well. Yeah,
what absolutely wrecks a track is if the hunter thinks he knows where the deer went and starts looping off and gets ahead of us.
Yeah.
Because now, who's that guy over there? Yeah. What's
there's so a I assume you have that occasionally.
It's a huge distraction. It's happened.
Yeah.
It's happened.
Yeah, that's... What's the most common reason that your dog does get off the track? Is it distractions like that? Is it water? Is it distance? Like...
I mean, usually it's because the deer's not dead, but, right. I have had one track that I know of that deer come up out of the woods to a field edge. There's a grass strip there. And somebody drove their truck over about 3 or 4 times. And see, if, I don't know, was I can't remember what the weather was like, but that's where we lost it.
Yeah.
And I think that was Pixie's first year. So it was what it was.
Human interference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so, you know, we're kind of talking about what guys should do and when to call and all that. We talked a little bit before about the app that's out there now, and I guess that makes it easier for people to find dogs, find handlers with dogs and all that in their area. Tell us a little bit about that. Like, when a guy does decide he needs a dog, what's he do to find one? What's the best option from that point?
Okay, yeah, so the app we're talking about is called Tracker, spelled T-R-A-K-R. Yeah.
Okay.
All uppercase. It was put together by Shane Simpson out of Minnesota, and he worked with the United Blood Trackers people, and it is the UBT approved app to use, which most people probably have heard about the United Blood Trackers website. You can go on there, punch in your zip code or the town you're hunting close to, and find a tracker. It'll give you a list of trackers close by. This app is, well, you download it to your phone, go in there, create a profile as a hunter, and when you shoot a deer, you basically just tell your story. It's, you know, fill in all the blanks. Hit send. It'll send a notification out to every tracker close.
Right.
And then the tracker sees that, gets in contact with the hunter.
And the trackers that are on that, like they're going to be finding, they have dogs that are certified at least level one by
you'll be able to see
UBT.
You'll be able to see if the dog is certified by UBT or not.
Okay.
So every tracker puts in a bio, basically tells you their experience level.
Mm-hmm. I would assume your recommendation would be to find one who's certified. Not that I'm sure there are good dogs that aren't probably.
There's a lot of good dogs that aren't. But those dogs you can probably, I mean, if they've got 90 recoveries under there.
Yeah. So that goes into it as much as that, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I know they did some vetting for the trackers that were on there, because one of our board members with the Illinois Deer Tracking Network was contacted about several people, you know, are they in your network or not, you know, was the first question.
Mm-hmm.
I believe most of the Illinois Deer Tracking Network trackers are on that app. We'll be using it.
Is this the first year for
this? Yes, this is the first year for that tracking app. And so, yeah, I don't know for sure how it's going
to all
work, but
right.
I'm confident that it will. It has been tested, and in states that are open already, they are using it and liking it.
It's working out.
It's working out, yes.
That's good.
Yes.
That's good.
So on that app, if I get on that app and I see you on there and I don't know you from Adam. Let's just say, yeah, I don't know you from Adam. I'm hunting close to where you're at. And I pull up my zip code and it pulls up you and two or three other people. How do you get notified that I'm looking for you, let's say?
I'm not sure. Can the hunter select which tracker he gets or not?
Okay.
I'm sure somehow.
So how do you know as a tracker that I'm looking for a tracker?
It'll pop up on my phone.
It'll pop up on your phone.
Notification on my phone.
Notification on your phone as a tracker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because, yeah, I make a tracker profile. You make a hunter profile.
Okay, okay,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But so you would know that I'm looking, but we're not sure if I could actually look specifically for you or not.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know for sure.
Okay. But I guess, like, obviously there's that on the website, but it's going to be probably more mobile-friendly,
yes,
to go through the app for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't have to have service to fill it out. I think it like it'll basically work like your text messages.
You can fill it out whenever you get service. It'll send it out.
Exactly. Yeah. You fill it out whenever you get into service again. Boom, send it out.
Right.
So yeah, I'm excited to see how that works.
Yeah.
Because the amount of data collected through that app is going to be amazing.
Oh yeah.
And everybody, you know, with time, everybody's going to be able to look through that data mm-hmm. in that app, and it'll help them, you know, better analyze what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know?
So me as John Q. Hunter, I fill out a profile, and then I've shot a deer, and then I go in there and I fill out what I've done, where I was at, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
And you as a tracker, you've got the same thing, and that's all compiled in that data that we can go and reach out and get sometime later then. Mm-hmm. And compare whatever then, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I think that, like, as a tracker, I can go in there. Like, if my buddy calls me, you know, directly, I think I'll be able to go in there, fill in all that information, run the track,
yeah,
finish it out.
Just as a database kind of thing, right?
For the database, yes.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Will that show you... Do you know if it will show you available trackers? Like,
yes.
If you take a track, you'll be unavailable through the app, or it would just...
It will tell you how many trackers have been notified.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So you'll at least know that something went out to somebody.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then it's on the tracker to accept and make contact with that person?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And now is there something... We'll go through the app, and I'll link this in the description of the episode too so everybody can find the app. I'll link there's an Illinois Deer Tracker Network
yes.
website as well, and the UB.
Facebook page.
Okay, Facebook page. And then the United Blood Trackers. I'll link all that stuff in the description so it's easy to find. But is there a place in the app where that communication happens, or is it you call the guy at that point or text him?
I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
But yeah, it gives you the option to send out a, you know, request a tracker at midnight.
Yeah.
Versus... I mean, a lot of people don't want to call at midnight.
Right.
The truth is, during the busy part of the season, I'm probably out.
You're up there anyway.
I'm probably out driving.
You're in the middle of your day.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So when does that really busy season start for you? Is it like pre-rut time, end of October, or is it mostly November or even earlier?
Well, the first busy weekend is probably usually in the middle of October.
Okay.
And so the first week, I usually average one track a day for mm-hmm. sure, maybe a week and a half, and then it kind of dies down a little bit, and by Halloween, it's pretty much wide open.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the first 2 weeks of November are just crazy.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah.
And that's when guys are taking their vacation, too, so it's like mm-hmm. you said, the first busy weekend, now it's like all week long
yeah.
for probably 2 weeks.
Like everybody goes out for the opener.
Yeah.
And then they have to work a little bit before their vacation.
Yep.
And out-of-staters coming in.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you probably see quite a bit of out-of-state guys that you're going to help out too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Especially in this area.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. We've talked about that several times. Like, we have over-the-counter tags. And for the guys that are, that's a big thing, but for the guys that are in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana, we're really, I mean, unless you're in Western Kentucky, we're the closest big buck state, except maybe Ohio. I don't know if Ohio does over-the-counter tags or not, but like the notable big buck state that people are going to come to. And I think that's why we do get a lot of guys from the southeastern United States, because it is closer than Missouri. It's closer than Iowa, and Iowa you have to draw as well. And things, as long as they want to pay the money, they can come here and hunt. And we... Well, even in the shop, we see a lot of guys from Georgia, Alabama, those states down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you can drive and you get here tomorrow and you can go to the local whatever, Walmart or whatever, and pick up your tags and your hunting license and you're good to go and you're legal. I mean,
yeah.
You're fine.
Yep. And
so you got into this because kind of as a hobby or...
You wanted to find your own deer?
Would that be fair, or you just wanted to find your own deer, and then it's kind of blossomed out from there? Would that be a fair assessment or no?
I mean, yeah, when I started, I dreamed about doing it for the public, you know.
Okay.
But I didn't know if my dog was going to be good enough.
Yeah.
how's this all going to work? Because, you know, I was just figuring it out, you know.
I just find this whole, I guess, arm of hunting or realm of – I find this fascinating that there's a whole network of trackers with dogs that are that good and and you have certifications and all that. I find that fascinating. Yeah. I think a lot of people find it interesting. I really do.
There's over 1,000 of us in the United States registered with – or, like, members of the United Blood Trackers Network.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Illinois, we have, I think, 32 members right now.
I promise, though, if you shoot a deer on November 13th and you wait till about 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night to call them, it's going to be tough to find one.
Well, so you got into unless it for
I
that.
Unless I can get to you, tomorrow morning, you know, work or something.
Yeah. So you got into it for that reason. So if you had your ultimate, this is where I want to be, maybe you're there. I don't know. But are you where you want to be, or you have a goal that, as far as tracking and being all that, I mean, what's that look like for you? If you had a fantasy about where you want to be.
If I was where I wanted to be, I would have a job that I could ditch about October 1st and forget about it till, you know, January
15th
and just track like what? That's cool.
All the time. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. I love it.
Obviously,
you got to. I mean, obviously you're good at it. You got to love your job to be good at it, and obviously you are. So
yeah,
and there's plenty of work throughout the season. It seems like
for me,
for trackers.
Oh, for trackers, yes.
In general,
yes, yeah. Yes, yeah. But my job demands that I be there.
Okay. So what do you do other than work?
It gets in the way of everything.
My job, I manufacture kitchen cabinets.
Okay. Yep. So that's your real job.
Yep. Woodworking.
Wow. Nice. For a company or for yourself? Or
It's a family business.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Very cool.
My dad's my boss.
Well, so that helps a little bit.
We kind of have a family business.
It does.
Yeah, I help him in the fall season.
He loves seeing my success tracking deer and so forth, but he does not like to see me take up time off to go do it. I try to be respectful about that and get at least 7.5 of my 8.5 hours in every day.
At least, yeah. Yep. Yep. But
definitely are. They're definitely an art to making cabinets. It's,
yeah.
Kudos for you for that, no doubt.
So your best effort recovery, that's your, I guess you call it a business name?
Yeah, that's what I go by.
Okay. So where'd you come up with that at? Was it just like, well, I'm going to give it my best shot, we're going to try to find them, and... Hey, best effort recovery, or like, where'd the name come from?
I don't know. Pulled it out of my head somewhere.
Yeah. It's better than some other place you could pull it out of.
Yeah. We were talking to Drew there at the...
I thought about it for, you know, days when I was sanding in the shop, you know, nothing else to do. I almost went with Hound Found Deer Recovery. There was a couple other names. I don't know.
Yeah. I like it. Best effort.
Yeah. It works.
Yeah, for sure. I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know you got a little bit of a drive back, but is there anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here? Anything we missed the guys should know or you think would be?
Yeah, a couple things the guys should know. It takes a very lot of blood to kill a deer. Like, every call I get, the hunter says, I smoked him, you know.
Right, yeah.
Well. You called me. You didn't smoke me.
Exactly.
Right. And they've got a lot of blood, good blood, you know. They don't realize how big a mess just a little bit of blood can make.
Yeah, right.
So, like I said, those UBT2 tests are run with a max of 8 ounces of blood if you're doing blood only, like no hooves. You cannot track that by eye.
No.
Probably pretty close, though. I mean, there's enough there that the dog can follow it. I've never done it, I guess. But it doesn't take a lot of blood to make a big mess.
Right.
But it does take a lot of blood
to kill the deer.
To take the deer past the point of shock, you know, like the point of no return.
Yep.
I have tracked several that were shot in the leg or something where it clipped an artery. They actually bled out.
Yeah.
Those tracks are usually about 2.5 miles.
No kidding.
Yes.
Wow. Which is completely different from if you shoot them and hit them in, what am I looking for?
The aortic artery?
Yes.
Yes.
And they bleed out in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the aortic artery will bleed them out in no time.
Which, and I've heard it said before, wouldn't it make sense that the number one thing that kills deer, especially archery equipment, is hemorrhaging?
Well, yeah, it's a lack of oxygen to the brain, basically. So you can deflate both lungs to where they can't breathe.
Right.
Right. Or you can get rid of their blood.
Mm-hmm.
Both ways is going to kill them. If you get back into the guts, sometimes it's going to be septicism or whatever, like poison.
Yeah, basically.
Blood poisoning that kills them. But that'll take several days.
Yeah.
Up to a couple weeks. Those deer, we'll probably not find them with a dog. If we do, he'll be alive.
Yeah.
I know it's pretty difficult to tell because obviously, I mean, but what percentage, your best guess would be deer that are dead, the percentage of those that you find?
Oh, upper 90s.
Really? Okay.
If they're dead, you're confident.
If they're dead, you're pretty well, you're going to find 9 out of 10 or more of dead deer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. For sure.
So if you're not finding a deer, it's because Joe didn't shoot it the way he should have, mm-hmm. give or take, right?
Usually, yes.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah, don't allow what you think is a good blood trail to suck you into going after the deer too quickly.
Right.
Be very slow in taking a bunch of people out into the woods with you. Because, you know, the more people... Your buddies will drag you into it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You go back home and start talking. They're like, hey, let's go find this deer, mm-hmm. or whatever. And you should wait. You should give them the proper amount of time.
Right.
A dead deer goes nowhere unless the coyotes eat him.
Yeah, right.
Goes to the shop. That's where he goes.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, just be smart.
Yeah. I think that's about as good a place as you can leave it.
Yeah, right?
That's pretty good advice.
Yeah.
Yep. Don't be an idiot out there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate you making the drive down and coming on and talking about that.
Another thing that folks can do before deer season right now is, you know, talk with your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with a plan for when you do shoot a deer and it crosses the property line. You know,
yep.
at least get his contact information to where you can call him.
Yep.
Because... when you call me, that's one of the things I'm going to tell you to do right away is make sure we're good with the neighbors.
Yep.
Because I don't want to be trespassing. Exactly.
Have you ever been caught?
There's been a couple times when I ended up on property I shouldn't have been.
That's uncomfortable.
On.
Right.
Yes.
And that's just not fair to you or the dog.
My hunter's like, yeah, we're good to go, you know.
Yeah.
And then the landowner shows up and like, what are you guys doing here?
Yeah, thankfully,
he was cool with it. But
that's not good for you or the dog or anything.
No.
So,
but well, that's one of those things that can get ugly pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
So, yeah, be honest with us, please.
Yeah.
Yep. We don't want to get in trouble and ruin a reputation. And
definitely don't want to get shot at.
Yeah. Right.
A deer is not worth for getting shot at.
No.
Yep. Awesome, man. Well, again, thanks. I appreciate you taking the time out, making the drive down, and coming on talking about this stuff. Because I do think it'll be interesting for people. It's interesting to me because just there's so much about it that I don't know. And I think this is an aspect that people don't think about enough is the recovery part.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks about the preparation and how to get them there and the shooting part and how to get to that shot. But then after that, it's, okay, I either climb down and think I have good blood and I go find him or I don't.
Yeah.
And then what?
Well, yeah. And another thing I should say is, if you know you hit him back, a gut shot deer, liver shot deer, they will usually not go very far before they lay down.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get out of there without spooking that deer, you can probably find him without a dog.
Yeah, in that first bed.
If you do happen to bump him, if he does get up, you're not guaranteed a blood trail.
Right.
Yeah. You may have one.
Right.
But you may also not have one.
If he lays there and it clots, then you're out of luck for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense. So,
cool. But I have had it where there was no blood trail. We spotted the deer. Mm-hmm. He was still alive, so we backed out at night. The guy comes back next morning to see if the deer's there, and he's got a nice blood trail away from the bed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, sometimes they open back up, I guess.
Yeah. Different things happen in different beds. But.
Yep, no doubt. Well, you got anything else for
the
man?
No. I think I just find this whole aspect of that just kind of interesting.
Oh,
very
it is.
Interesting.
It is.
But yeah. I hadn't thought, like my canyon, I hadn't thought about it.
Yeah, there's so much to learn. I mean, I learn things on every track probably.
Yeah.
And I know guys that have been doing this for 40 years, and they say that every year they learn something new.
I mean, I know a guy that, I got a dog, and that's about it. I mean, I had no clue that there's a whole association with this, and I find that interesting.
Yeah. So, cool. Yeah, there's a lot of guys that, I've got a dog that found four deer, you know. But
right.
What was the blood trail like?
Yeah, right.
You know, did you see the deer fall, or did he fall just out of sight?
Yeah.
You know, is there blood trail all the way?
Yep.
Our members with the Illinois Deer Tracking Network, we've got trained dogs. A lot of our dogs are rock stars. I mean,
mm-hmm.
3/4 mile with no blood. 12 hours old, recoveries past 40 hours, some of them.
Crazy.
It's
crazy.
After rain, after snow, just...
Right.
It's cool. Mind-blowing what those dogs can do, yeah.
Yep, awesome. It's amazing. Well, if you're in that situation, for sure, anybody listening, don't hesitate. Reach out and call.
Yep.
And when in doubt, get a dog out there. They're going to be able to find it when you can't.
Yep. Sounds like the app's a good option.
Somebody's wanting to help you. We might not be able to, but we're wanting to.
Exactly. At least you're wanting to.
Right.
All right, man. Well, hey, I think that'll wrap it up for this episode. Again, thanks for coming in. And I'll link everything down in the description for people to find your best effort recovery.
Yep.
And all the tracker stuff, the app, and all that too. So, appreciate it.
All right.